Welcome to This Is Money podcast, sponsored by Charles Stanley Direct. I'm Georgie Frost, and joining me and Simon Lambert today is Lee Boyce for a very special episode. Dear listeners, it is our 10-year anniversary. Back when podcasting wasn't cool or completely ubiquitous, we decided to take a punt. How has the world of finance changed since then? And where were babies Georgie, Lee and Simon in their own financial journeys? Where are we now? And what have we learned? So as well as the usual fare that you would expect from our pod, Trump 2.0, interest rates and bamboo, we hope you will indulge us. Because before even Trump 1.0, there was the This Is Money podcast. Don't forget, you can stay up to date with the latest breaking money news. Just go to thisismoney.co.uk or download the app.
Take control of your finances with Charles Stanley Direct. Invest, save, coach, or plan. Using technology where it's helpful and people where it matters. Our website and app make trading cost-effective and flexible. But we're more than just an online investment service. We're here for you regardless of your financial needs or if your life takes an unexpected turn. Your finances, your way. Take control today with Charles Stanley Direct. Sign up now.
Investment involves risk.
But first, he's back. Donald Trump has been re-elected as President of the United States. But what does it mean for us here, especially investors, with defense and oil and gas stocks and cryptocurrencies all expected to get a boost? Experts are warning it could start a trade war, though, that could be an economic nightmare for Britain and Europe. And does Sakir have some serious brown nosing to do? Simon, Trump is back.
Trump is back. Yes. I would say it was surprising. It wasn't really that surprising. It was meant to be on a knife edge, but then it didn't turn into a knife edge at all, looking at the numbers. Although what I would say, and I think I realized that I was doing this the other day, is that I always look at US election results through the prism of our own electoral system. So when I saw the numbers for Trump on, you know, the morning after the election, and I saw him with a big, big lead, I was like, wow, you know, that's a landslide. But actually, that's not how the American electoral system works. I have only very basic knowledge of the US electoral system. I'm sad to say, I think you actually have to live there to properly understand it. And I'm not even sure people properly understand it who live there. But the electoral college system basically consists of, at the most, you know, kind of basic level, the states that have the most number of people in it carry the biggest number of votes. So, for example, California, which has a lot of people living there, I believe has 54, whereas Alaska, which has not many people living there, has 3. People vote for who they want to be the president. So they voted for either Donald Trump or Kamala Harris. And in that state, so for example, California, if, you know, Kamala Harris wins, then she gets all 54 of them. Or if Donald Trump wins, he gets all 54 of them. They add them all up and you have to get to 270 to win. At the same time, they also elect people to Congress. And Congress has two separate houses, the House of Representatives and the Senate. In the Senate, there are 100 members and they're elected every 6 years, roughly in thirds, I think. So it's basically at an election, at a midterm, at an election. It kind of keeps rolling around in a cycle. Whereas the House of Representatives, which is the people who get called congressmen and congresswomen, if you have watched your American TV dramas, you'll know all about this. They are elected every 2 years. So that's a very, very short-term cycle. And the president and the vice president essentially say what they want the laws to be and what the policy is. But putting that into practice, actually turning that into laws, is the responsibility of the House of Representatives and the Senate. And bills have to pass through both of those places. So that's why people talk about it being so important for the president's party to control Congress, basically, because in order to get stuff through, you need to control Congress. So to go back to Donald Trump, not surprising.
No, can I just take a moment there to say I did a degree in American history and politics, and that was way better described than I could even begin to. And I also know that the population of Alaska is 750,000. population of California is 39 million. You're absolutely right. 54 votes. Alaska, 3. There's a great interactive map where you can go across, find out, you know, how many votes, etc. But it is a complex system that you have explained beautifully, Simon. Thank you.
Thanks, Georgie. It's You're almost welcome. Like I had to reacquaint myself with how this works on Tuesday, isn't it? And it only being Friday now, and me not being that old yet, I can retain information for 4 or 5 days. Which brings us back to one of the reasons why potentially Donald Trump won the election. Because unfortunately, the Democrats decided that someone who didn't look like he could retain information for 4 or 5 days to most of the world was the ideal person to run as the next president of the United States on the basis that he was the current president of the United States. And everybody looked at Joe Biden and said, great guy, amazing political career, wonderful he's been president. Maybe not for the next 4 years, though. And they left it so damn late that they basically had no choice apart from to go for Kamala Harris, who I'm not going to try and unpick the result of the election here or whatever, but definitely one of the disadvantages that they faced was that she is not the most popular person in US politics, even amongst many Democrat voters. So there you go. Anyway, we now have President Trump. And I actually had this described to me brilliantly by a couple of people since who work in the investment world and said, well, it basically takes us back to the scenario where if you remember Trump 1.0, you'd wake up in the morning and it would be, what crazy thing has he said overnight that could have completely turned everything on its head and totally moved markets? He keeps people on their toes. You know, it was quite chaotic. Will it be more chaotic this time around? Is he going to go in all guns blazing on his policy stuff? Because he can't be president again. The rules say that he can't be president again. I mean, you wouldn't trust him not to try and change those rules, but the rules do say he can't be president again. So what's he going to try and do? And I think the big difference this time around is we've seen MAGA round one, right? Make America Great Again. He is inheriting an economy that is in pretty rude health, despite actually running on a platform that says the economy isn't doing that well and America is losing out, and also off the back of high inflation. But actually in America, wages have been going up more. They get paid a lot more money than us. It's quite galling for us poor Brits to see Americans complaining about not being able to put gas in their car. But it is a very divided society, but it is also a country that is growing rapidly, that has seen strong growth. Its businesses are the envy of the world. But he is going to be very protectionist in his policies. He is going to ramp up the protectionism. And that potentially spells bad news, you know, for the rest of the world. It potentially changes the global economic order differently to how it would be if the Democrats had continued in charge. And I think the other big thing we need to look at here is this love-in between Trump and the tech bros now. Now, I remember last time round that there was no love lost, really, between Trump and big tech. But you don't have to, you know, be an avid watcher of the news to see the bromance between Donald Trump and Elon Musk at the moment. And, you know, a lot of the tech industry is looking at Trump and going, yeah, okay, we like this. We want Trump. So it's very interesting to see what happens there.
Lee, I don't want to get too much into sort of the psyche of the American people here, but do you think sort of 4 years of cost of living crisis, this sort of thing, I know America's, you know, economy is in a pretty rude health, but it doesn't filter down to the people on the street, I feel. Do you think that people were less interested in some of the other sort of social issues that perhaps the debates were going on, and more about economics? And where that leads me to is, what is Trumponomics? Is there such a thing?
I was about to say, Trumponomics is back, baby. Here we go. I was looking at all the kind of aftermath of this and what people, the reasons why people were voting. The economy was number one. It was the economy and immigration. That was what was number one and number two. I'm not going to try and get into the psyche of American people. You know, it's a democratic process. They voted. That's who they voted for. People, I think, look at Donald Trump and think of him as, you know, he's a businessman first. I've been a businessman for a very long time. People in America probably see him as someone that can help bring more economic success. And you're right, we've just come off the back of sky high inflation, which has not just hit us, but has hit America as well. I've seen plenty of social media posts over recent years of cost of certain things in certain states in America, and that's filtered through to people, everyday people that are not kind of happy about the way the cost of living has gone. But you only have to look at the way that the markets have reacted. For example, so S&P 500 in the last 5 days is up 4.3%. You know, so businesses see it as a kind of this is good news. Definitely when you're talking about the tech bros, you know, the crypto world, we've seen Bitcoin go up past $76,000 a coin as of time of recording. And then you look at the UK, I mean, look at the FTSE 100 this morning. So we're recording this on Friday morning. It's down more than 100 points at the time of talking this. Now, the reason for that, bringing this a bit closer to home, is the potential for trade tariffs. And actually, Donald Trump called the word tariff the most beautiful word in the world. And there's talks about him putting on pretty heavy levies on imports that come into America, and the US is, you know, the biggest global trading partner for Britain, you know, where we export goods to, probably have more of a reliance on them than we have done in previous decades because of Brexit. But I'd rather not start going down that road because we'd be here forever. So there's a lot at play. But what that means fundamentally for America is it's a more of a kind of made in America kind of mentality. And you only have to look at something like the motor industry, which circles us all back round to Elon Musk and Tesla. And Tesla itself is up about 18%, the share price, since the Trump election win. You know, there's a massive battle going on at the moment with electric cars. You know, China has ramped up electric car production exponentially. We've seen quite a lot of panic in Germany, for example. There's a vote with no confidence over there. You know, a lot of their manufacturing industry is to do with motoring cars, and there was an extra tariff brought in on Chinese cars recently. There's a lot at play in the whole global sphere. And in terms of what Trump will probably mean for America, is it probably will be more tariffs on imports, trying to create more American jobs. And I think a lot of that is probably how the music played out in America. And that's what, you know, USA, USA. It's that kind of mentality, isn't it? Like, you know, they want to have more control. Does Donald Trump, you know, mean that? And does he mean, you know, as Simon was saying, sometimes when we think about the Trump 1.0, you know, there were some crazy things that just came out of nowhere, but you have to say it felt like a kind of time of relative stability geopolitically. You know, we only have to look at what's gone on the last couple of years with Ukraine, Russia, Israel, Middle East. You know, people also, rightly or wrongly, think that he might be able to help you know, calm all of this down. I know it's funny.
Because you're like, oh, it's relative stability, because that was Trump's influence, you know, because yeah, Trump well, was no, in charge. But the whole world was peace and love, man.
But you know what I'm trying to say. It's kind of like it's all gone quite crazy, and it's like, well, that's we added more crazy to the crazy. Trying to unpick all of it, we'd be here forever. But I think that is a real whistle stop. Why I think that Trump's back in power and what it means economically.
It's a really tough one. I do a regular financial slot on radio, and about 3 minutes to air, they said, can we not talk about interest rates? Can we talk about Trump's influence on the UK and what will happen? And I said, no. Because there are so many things that could happen. You've mentioned there are things like electric cars, dollar, pound, trade wars, food. But is there, Simon, a coherent answer that we could have for what it means for investors particularly? Is there something that we're looking at here? You've mentioned tech, presumably might get a boost here. What else could this mean for investors?
I think what I would be careful about would be reading too much into the immediate reaction to what has happened. So just to put that in context, this week, the S&P 500 is up 4.6%. Okay, it's seen a rise off the back of Trump's election. It was actually already rising on Monday, but it's good to look at these things over the week because actually some of it anticipates what's going to happen as well. And I actually think that maybe markets had decided it wasn't quite so knife edge by the time we got to by the time we got to the election, there was actually talk already on kind of Monday, and especially last Friday, of the Trump trade being back on. The S&P 500 is up 26% year to date. Bitcoin, that's up 10.9% this week. That's up 72% this year. Again, huge volatility. Don't read too much into that. Tesla shares are the interesting one. They're actually now up 19.5% this year. They saw a big rise a couple of weeks ago when Tesla released some results that were received quite well. And actually, up until those results, Tesla shares were the only Magnificent Seven stock that was down this year, whilst some of the others had risen substantially. Then they've had another, you know, turbo boost from Trump's election. And I pick those things out as examples of things that people think, you know, are going to benefit off the back of this. But that doesn't mean that, you know, those are the things that are going to keep going. There is a lot of concern amongst investors about the Magnificent Seven and the size of the Magnificent Seven and the concentration of the US stock market. The US stock market makes up more than 60% of the global stock market. So if you just buy a global stock market tracker, if you do the sensible thing, US stock market makes up more than 60% of that. You've then got that US market dominated by these seven companies, the Magnificent Seven companies. I did an investing show with David Coombs of Rathbones. He's their head of multi-asset, and we published it this week. If you want to find it, go to thisismoney.co.uk/investing show. I recommend it because he's got some interesting thoughts on markets. Now, he said that you have to treat the Magnificent Seven like an asset class now. It's effectively become an asset class. And you don't have to be massively pro it or massively against it. You could take your own view, and you should look at all of those companies individually. You should be what they call a bottom-up stock picker. You judge each company on its merits. But he said you also have to be aware that they are effectively now an asset class. They do tend to all move up in unison, or all move down in unison. Something that happens with one can affect the rest of them, even though the thing that's happened with one of them might have nothing directly to do with the other ones. And they are now so big that when they do all move, they shift the markets. And they don't just shift the market in terms of the market pricing, they shift the market sentiment. So you do need to have a think about that. But again, because their share prices are riding so high, particularly companies like Nvidia, perhaps also Meta, which is up a lot this year, you increase the risk of disappointment. Then, you know, maybe they're not quite priced for perfection yet, but they're not far off it. You know, they deliver some results or something emerges that all of a sudden rattles investors' cages, and they will sell off. And when they sell off hard, and they can lose quite a lot of money in quite a short space of time. So the answer to that obviously is to be diversified. But how diversified are you when you're holding a global stock market tracker and they make up such a big chunk of it? So these are some of the things you've got to think about. And it means that some investors are thinking about, okay, how do I still, you know, hold these things that people think are going to continue to do well and continue to make money, but whilst also opening up the opportunity to hold stuff that might, you know, be different or be viewed as a bit cheaper. One of the suggestions, for example, is that if you look at investing in the US, then actually you should be focusing less of your attention on the big US stocks, you know, which are dominated by those Magnificent Seven, and looking more at the smaller and mid-cap US stocks, which might benefit more from Trump's protectionism. That maybe you might want to be thinking about, okay, what are the companies, what are the sectors that are going to be affected the most by potentially the rise in tariffs and things like that? Or to go back to a point that I will often make, you could try not to be too clever, and you could just buy that global stock market tracker fund, sit back, relax, and let the market do the work for you. I do think that what it creates is it creates a difficult scenario. The other thing that you have to bear in mind is what is seen as happening by markets at the moment is interest rates staying that bit higher for that bit longer. They're not going to come down by as much. This has fed through into US Treasury yields, which have been higher off the back of it, because ironically, although Donald Trump stood on a platform of Joe Biden caused the inflation and I'm going to get rid of it, he's actually seen as the inflationary one of the two presidential candidates due to the things that he says he's going to do. Hence, US Treasury bills trading that bit higher. What does that mean for everything else? What does that mean for companies? But what does it also mean for corporate bonds? There's a lot of professional investors I've spoken to recently who've said the bond market's pretty interesting at the moment. They said for years they just would not touch bonds. They weren't interested in government bonds. They weren't interested in corporate bonds because the yield was way too low. But now you've got government bonds yielding, you know, 4.5%. You've got corporate bonds yielding 5% or more. And there's some interest there. The other feed through, something we're going to talk about in a minute, obviously, is Bank of England on interest rates. Bank of England sets interest rates to control UK inflation, but it does keep an eye on the Fed. So what does that mean for us over here in that sense?
Well, I'll ask you that in a second, but I just want to get Lee's view finally, because you mentioned about trade wars. You mentioned about sort of UK's position. There was a bit of, how do we put it? Not so pleasant words said on sides and accusations and whatnot related to the Labour Party, David Lammy, Keir Starmer. Again, this is not a politics show, of course, but is the UK going to be left out in the cold a little bit because some of the comments, or is the special relationship going to be alive and well, Lee, do you think?
Ding, 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 ding. I was waiting for Georgie to say special relationship. I was wondering when it was coming. I think it's a little bit, it's going to be a little bit difficult, isn't it? Because there's been lots of things written in the past. But also sometimes, Georgie, I think you just have to leave the past behind and just say, you know, okay, I know you can giggle at this, but you
I'm laughing because I hope President Trump is, or President-elect Trump. Is he President Trump? Because he was president in the past. So was he president-elect?
No, he's president. Anyway? He's president-elect until he becomes president.
Yeah, but it's still President Obama, isn't it? Mr. President. You still hold that title, don't you? So is it Mr. President, maybe. President-elect Trump?
You tell me. You're the person who just told us
the new
that you studied this stuff.
Yeah,
why are you asking me and Lee?
Years ago, Simon. My God, I can't remember what happened last week. Sorry, Lee.
That's all right.
Forgive me.
Is a special relationship at risk? Is a special relationship at risk? Is there even such thing as a special relationship? It's important that Britain and the US have stellar relations. There's a lot going on in the world in which US and UK are major players in trying to create stability in the world. And it's not a good look at some of the things that have been said in the past. But does Trump hold a grudge? Well, you know, if there's going to be a global leader in the world, I would suggest would hold a grudge. I would suggest that Donald Trump would quite possibly be high up on that list. And what can be done to repair relations? Now, I was reading the other day about David Lammy saying that he'd been trying to get under the kind of like trying to figure out who Donald Trump was in the last few months by visiting the US. And, you know, it sounded like quite sensible grown-up comments compared to what had been banded around by him in previous years. And of course, there was the Keir Starmer phone call to congratulate Mr. Trump. But it is important that we have relations with the US, whoever the president is, and whatever your views are of said president or said prime minister. You know, it has to be a degree of professionalism, a degree of, you know, working together, because it is vitally important for the planet, I would say.
Yeah, agreed. I'm just wondering if we've seen a notable rise in sale of fake tan and whether that might be something worth investing in.
Georgie, I live in Essex, mate. Is this a permanent fake tan? I mean, what do you mean? There'd be no uptick here. I've already rushed out. I've got my monthly subscription. What do you mean?
Oh, Lee, I've got images of your face. Anyway, right. Sorry.
So I would say one thing on this special relationship stuff and the Keir Starmer, David Lammy thing. Actually, I'll say two things. First of all, I'll give credit to my wife who said on the morning after the election, wouldn't it be funny if he just ghosted Keir Starmer for 4 years? Which would be problematic for the UK, but would be amusing if he just like refused to talk to him and just ghosted him for 4 years.
Yeah, blocked him on X.
Yeah. But the other thing I would say on a more sensible note is, actually, I think maybe this isn't so much of a problem. If there is one person in this world who has been quite outspoken about almost everybody he has come into contact with and has possibly said one thing about them that was really quite mean and then turned around when he needed to and said really, really nice things about them and become their best buddy, it's a certain president-elect Donald J. Trump.
All right, John, can we leave him to one side for now? Is that all right? We're going to go
That would
back.
be a really good idea.
Yeah, Lee is nodding along. Simon mentioned, Lee, about interest rate cuts. We got interest rate cuts on both sides of the pond this week. 4.75% from 5%. That was from the Bank of England. And it was the same move from the Fed. So what does it mean, Mr. Boyce, for our money?
Well, I mean, in terms of mortgages, we've obviously seen variable rates cut by some of the big lenders in the aftermath of this. But a lot of what has happened was already priced in anyway. I mean, the vote was really nailed on. It was 8-1, and the one person voted for a hold. In terms of mortgage rates, the real kick in the teeth of this in terms of fixed rate mortgages is the prediction from experts and brokers is that it's probably not going to result in rates being cut across sort of fixed rates. And the reason for that is, as we've spoken on this podcast before, it's more over the swap rates. And we've had a kind of bit of a mini dip in the summer and sort of September, October, and now it's starting to kind of go the other way. So actually not all that heavily linked at the moment to what base rate is doing, and a 0.25% percentage cut has not really point percentage cut has not really done much for that. In terms of savings, again, we're kind of in a time where it's just a bit of a mixed bag. We've seen savings rates drop off, without a doubt, but then some strange things are going on this week, including two providers sort of started ramping up their Cash ISA Easy Access Best Buy rates to 5.17%. So you can go and get savings rates that are currently beating interest rates, beating inflation rates by a considerable distance, and it's all kind of a bit of a muddy picture. And where interest rates go next, it feels like there's a lot of messages out there from different massive financial organizations that are kind of going from anywhere from sort of 3.75 to 2.5% over the next 12 months. There was some quite interesting charts that came out of this. It was a 90-page report from the MPC sort of outlining what's the future for inflation and the economy. They were saying in this that actually the budget, oh, I've just said the budget, oh my word, the budget, Georgie, do you remember that last week? They're saying that the budget will actually end up increasing inflation to about 2.5% as weakness in energy prices fall out of the annual comparison. Is what it was saying in this, and saying that the budget is provisionally expected to boost inflation by just under half of a percentage point at the peak, reflecting both the indirect effects of the smaller margins of excess supply and direct impacts from the budget measures. Probably quite a bit of that would be the national insurance add-on to employers being fed through to higher prices to consumers. It's probably the sting in the tail of that one. They were saying in here that the UK economy is set to now slow this year, which it's been volatile GDP growth. It was negative last year, been strong growth early this year. It's a real mixed bag of kind of financial and economic outlook in this. And the upshot is that we're saying interest rates at around about 3.6% in 3 years' time. Not a million miles off from where we are now. You know, we've got to remember how many rises there were between the end of 2021 up until we started seeing a couple of cuts recently. It's all going to be down to where inflation sits and trying to kind of keep that beast under control. They did say in here that, you know, the impact on mortgages in here that it will feed through a little bit more over the coming years in terms of fixed rate mortgages, and as a result, house prices are kind of going to be nudging back higher. In fact, we had a couple of things come out this week in terms of house prices. First of all, Savills saying that they predict that a typical home in Britain is going to add £84,000 in value by 2030. And then we had Halifax House Price Index this week, which showed for the first time we've surpassed the 2022 house price peak, where it'd been lagging behind mainly from the hangover from the Liz Truss mini budget, which saw mortgage rates shoot up. So for the first time, we've actually seen house prices go past that peak that was previously recorded. So very real mixed bag of what's going to happen next. We've got another meeting just before Christmas. There will be lots of pressure, I would imagine, for another cut, especially when you consider that that was 8-1. I mean, that's a real nailed on kind of result.
Simon, your views on this one?
I think we're again in a position where interest rates are expected to stay that bit higher for that bit longer. I think if we go back to the start of the year, that's what's interesting, because interest rates were expected to fall much more this year than they did. We have ended up with inflation below target, and yet interest rates are considerably higher than was expected. Now they're expected to stay that bit higher for longer. A lot of the mortgage rate falls that you've seen have been running ahead of markets and running off those expectations. And they slowed earlier this year when those expectations were dialed in, and then they've picked up again over the summer. And now they've really tailed off, and we've actually seen, some rises. But the interesting thing to note is that these expectations change. The Bank of England might put out a 90-odd page report on what it thinks is going to happen to inflation and interest rates. You can go back through a succession of those reports every quarter if you so choose to, and then compare it to what actually happened. And it's very far from nailed on what they forecast is going to happen is going to happen. So at the moment, we've got those thoughts about interest rates. Is that actually going to be the case? Who knows? You could find that they actually we flip around, and by February, we're talking about many more falls next year. It's very difficult to know. And I wouldn't base too many of your decisions around what the latest forecast for interest rates is. I would just mainly be aware of what's going on, and also do those really sensible planning ahead things of, if your mortgage is up for renewal in the next 6 months, look at what deals are now. See if you can lock into one. You don't have to take it out. Go through a broker, add the fee to the loan, and then you can then pay it off if you do take the loan out. But it means you pay no fees up front. You don't have to take it out, but you have locked into the rate now. And if rates fall between now and when your mortgage is up for renewal, then great. You can switch to a cheaper one. But if rates go up, then at least you've locked into a better rate now. And then also on the savings rates, as Lee said, there are some great rates out there still. Cash ISAs, easy access cash ISAs, top rate 5.17%. It's nothing to be sniffed at. Get yourself onto the best rates, and also get as much as possible of your savings into an ISA and protect them from tax, because that's the thing that really eats into your returns, particularly if you are a higher rate taxpayer. And you only get a £500 personal savings allowance, or an additional rate taxpayer, of which I imagine there are a fair few who listen to this podcast, and you get zero. So, really think about those basics, I would say.
Good advice there, Simon. Lee, just a final reader question time. I rather enjoy this one, just as I discovered my neighbour in my front garden cutting back some trees. And she said, "Oh, you've caught me. Go ahead, cut the trees. I don't care." But this is about bamboo. So one neighbour here, they've got bamboo growing along the boundary with our property. And the roots are spreading under the fence and into our garden. Now, we've dug up as much as we can, but we're concerned it could take thousands off the value of our house. Can we insist that they remove it? Lee Blofeld Boyce, I should just point out there that I saw a little sort of phallic object kind of coming up into the screen, wiggling. And
Hey,
it was a
Georgie, steady on,
cat,
steady
sorry, it was a
on
cat's tail. And all I can
it.
see is Lee, actually, it looks like you're strumming the cat.
This was a family podcast, Georgie. Yeah, no, cat just jumped on my lap. I was just
Yeah.
giving
So
her a
Lee
stroke.
Blofeld Boyce, what is the answer to this? My terrible brain here just went, why can't you just put like a, I don't know, some sort of like a poison or something that could kill it from that side, or like,
Oh,
or
it's
something that you can cover the roots with, like a,
trouble is
like.
being that, George, you can make the problem even worse, because it's very difficult to get rid of. And actually,
Oh, well, explain, Lee, explain.
bamboo comes into many, many different varieties, and some of it is way worse than others. And what you don't want is the bamboo that kind of grows underneath. You don't really see it, it's a bit out of sight, and then it comes up through the house. There's been a lot of that in the sort of last couple of decades, because it became very popular from certain gardening shows, because it looks fairly pleasing to the eye, minimal upkeep, all of that kind of stuff. But as Dean Dunham points out here, the consumer lawyer, it's becoming as big a problem as Japanese knotweed. But Japanese knotweed is considered an invasive species, whereas bamboo isn't. So it carries no restrictions on planting. So you're free to go and get a bamboo and put it in your garden. you have to be very, 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 very careful. But because there's no regulations, you know, you can't get your neighbor to remove the plant. You can't insist that they do it. But given that it's more in the kind of public eye now, I would say, Dean is saying in here, like, under the circumstances, you will potentially have a claim against your neighbor and could demand compensation if the value of your property is hit, and or compensation to cover the cost of removal of any bamboo and any repair costs. You can also ask your local authority to treat the problem as a form of antisocial behaviour, and if the council agrees, it will issue a neighbour with a formal notice to deal with the problem. I don't know how much of that goes on. I don't really know if the council would step in, and I would have thought that the cases that are very few and far between. Probably the best bet is just to really talk to the neighbour, tell her concerns, say, look, we'll go halves on this. Get a professional company to remove it. You can't really remove it yourself. As I say, you can make the problem pretty, you can make it worse, depending on the variety. There's lots of different varieties, and you should go and find out what species it is before making any kind of rash decisions. But we get lots of people writing in about bamboo problems, Georgie. It is a serious problem. Yeah, it's become a serious problem. You know, it grows very well. Sometimes it can take many, many, many years before it goes on a massive growth spurt, and you can find it from one side of the garden, and all of a sudden it's in another part, or in worst case scenario, coming up into a room in your downstairs of your house. And it's very strong material. Yeah, of course it is.
You can buy it and put it in your garden.
You can. I would have thought that the... because some of it, as I say, is kind of non-invasive. You know, it doesn't really... It doesn't do an awful lot. But some of it, it really is an issue. And I would say that most garden centres probably wouldn't carry the bamboo that's the real big issue. But you've got to be very careful.
You're also meant to plant it in containers. The roots in containers. I mean, I have some doubt as to how well they contain those roots, because I've seen this in action at a relative's house from coming in from next door. But you are meant to plant them in containers, but loads of people just didn't plant them in containers. They just like planted it.
That's it for part one.
I'm joined now by Alex Webbone of Charles Stanley for our weekly Investing Explained feature. Alex, welcome to the podcast. We've got a question here from a listener. I earn £55,000 a year and have inherited £100,000. How much money am I allowed to pay into my pension each year?
Hi, Simon. So you're allowed to put in as much as you want. However, you'd not receive tax relief on anything you contribute above your earnings. So £55,000 in this case, meaning that would be the most tax efficient amount to contribute. The rule is that you can contribute up to 100% of your relevant earnings, or £60,000, whichever is the lower, in order to receive tax relief on contributions. And relevant earnings in this context means a combination of salary, bonus, commissions, that type of thing, although it's worth noting that this doesn't include rental income. If you don't have any earnings, you can contribute £2,880 net, which is then grossed up to £3,600 with tax relief applied. It's also worth mentioning that carry forward relief is available for those who earn over £60,000 and have contributed less in previous years, and this can be backdated to a maximum of 3 years.
Alex, thank you very much.
Thanks, Simon.
Welcome back to November 2014. Brexit, Trump, COVID, what were they? Ed Sheeran was at number one in the charts, which, to be fair, could be now. Interstellar was the movie that we were all watching. Obama was president. George Osborne was the Chancellor. And Lee and Simon walked into my studio in Pimlico, bright-eyed and bushy-tailed as we were, the start of a long journey together. Lee was Son's kids and wife. Me, renting in a Clapham hovel with no heating. Good times. And Simon, well, Simon was 10 years younger, looked the same, just as smart. I don't know what else to add to Simon. Like, you were always sensible, married and had kids. So he's nodding. This podcast has been recorded from Dubai, Egypt, Spain, Poland, LA, France, Turkey, Italy, Cyprus and Newcastle. And that's just me. Simon, Lee, what an honour it's been. Happy anniversary to you both. 10 years of podcasting. Shout out to Rich Browning, for all his contributions. I'm sure you'll mention Simon, because you wrote an article celebrating our decade of podcasting. We are veterans in the world of podcasting, lads. The floor is yours, Simon.
Yes, it was the 10th anniversary of This Money podcast on the 7th of November, 2024. I know that because I can go back in our podcast episodes and find the first one. But it started off as a mid-morning radio show as well, when Georgie was on Share Radio and doing the morning show. And we would troop down to the Share Radio studios in Pimlico from our offices in Kensington and go record an hour with her and put it out as a podcast. We soon realised that the podcast was proving to be very popular and that also we really enjoyed doing it. And there were some architects of the podcast in the early days. Me, Georgie, Lee, Rachel Rickard-Strauss, Richard Browning, as mentioned, the late Richard Browning, who sadly died last year and is much missed. And also Sam Lane needs a shout out as well, who works in our commercial department and was there when we formulated the plan for how we do it. And also we should probably mention Gavin Oldham at Share Radio as well, who was also involved in it. But the podcast took on a life of its own and it just became something that we did every Friday. And we really enjoy doing it. And we also enjoy the fact that you listeners enjoy listening to it. And we love nothing more than when we get emails from you telling you that we like it, or, you know, this is what we think, or could you do this? Could you do that? Could you answer that question? We really like that. So email us at podcast@thisismoney.co.uk. For me, standout memories range from the serious ones, the morning after the Brexit vote.
Yeah.
Get down there Friday morning. Oh, that felt like a real shocker, that did. Actually, the US election, the first Trump election, felt like a big, big shock as well. COVID, lockdown, trying to work out how on earth we were going to record the podcast in those weird, like, first weeks of, like, you know, being stuck at home whilst the government rolled out increasingly scary messages and told you you're only allowed out your house once a day and everything, and everyone just felt slightly strange and trying to explain all this weird stuff that was going on, and everybody just going, well, what on earth happens now? But then also some more lighthearted stuff.
I'm surprised, Simon, you didn't mention turkey ham there. I feel a bit
offended. Yeah, the Christmas taste tests. The Christmas taste test involved tasting turkey, except it wasn't turkey. It was packet turkey, and one of which was turkey ham, which I do hope that even through the cost of living crisis, none of you were having for your Christmas dinner.
Times are tight, Simon. Times are tight. My favourite was the Brussels sprouts in a can. Slightly metallic flavour. Thank you very much, Rich Browning. Lee Boyce, some memories?
I think just to go back on thinking about when we first started the podcast, I used to be absolutely petrified of coming on because it was obviously a live show. It was on a Friday morning. It was all a bit frantic getting over, hot-footing it from High Street Kensington to Pimlico. There was always some sort of tube issue, which if you have any knowledge of the Circle Line, you will know just what I'm talking about here. And I sometimes kind of dread it a little bit in those first few months because it was live. And I think, oh, watch, George is going to ask me something really, really technical and completely baffling. And then I'll be honest, like, then since I think that the last, especially since COVID times, I really look forward to, you know, I wake up on a Friday morning and if I'm on the podcast, it's exciting. And it's actually like catching up with friends talking about money. And I hope that comes across in what we do. And I think it does. And I think that's why, you know, lots of people do get in touch and people listen to it, you know, because it is just a kind of a roundup of the money news from the week, but we kind of don't take ourselves too seriously, I don't think, and we try and bring it, you know, to life and what it means for you. And I guess if you're talking, you know, standout memories, I mean, I really do remember in the beginning doing a couple of shows with Rich, God rest his soul, and just thinking, wow, I can't believe some of this is going out on live radio, because Rich had the darkest, funniest sense of humour you could ever imagine. but I'm not sure how well that translates to a money show on a mid-morning on a Friday. And I sometimes, you know, talking about fits of giggles, I'd sometimes just internally be saying, I cannot believe what we've just said. But, you know, I'd echo what Simon said. We've covered some absolutely huge, monumental things that have happened over the last decade. You know, COVID, it's totally kind of hit us for six, didn't it? And we didn't know where it was going next, and what we were going to cover and how to cover it in a kind of sensitive way. Whereas I go back to what I said at the start, you know, we're not always completely serious. Like, you know, we do sometimes we let our guard down a little bit and have a bit of a giggle. You know, but that's quite hard when it's something as serious as, you know, the pandemic that was going on. It was just trying to find the right balance and find our voice. And I think that'd be my parting shot, really. I feel like I've grown up with the podcast, and I think, and hopefully I think some of the listeners have as well. You know, as you pointed out at the beginning, I started as someone in their mid-20s. I didn't own a home. I didn't have a family. I didn't have a wife. You know, I was in a completely different scenario to what I am now, with two children, a wife and a house. And as I have done over almost 15 years of working at This Is Money, have just learned things as I've gone along about all of the money things in our lives. And part of that is also, it's an education for me sometimes, George, on the podcast, when I'm listening to you, listening to Simon talking, and I glean bits and pieces. And, you know, it's been phenomenal. And Georgie, you know, you've been absolutely fantastic. You know, we don't really kind of blow our horns all the time, but, you know, absolutely brilliant host and brilliant producer. And here's to the next 10 years. I mean, you've got to think, Georgia, we've hardly missed a Friday recording over 10 years. You know, that's 500 plus episodes. It's incredible. But it's been an honour, privilege. So it's been a bit of a self-indulgent little bit of a section, so I hope you forgive us for that.
Simon, though, I do want to learn a bit from this sort of section. And I think that, like I said, my big thing for me personally, the investing in yourself, diversifying your work portfolio, getting started and then keeping going, learning along the way, the things that I've learned, basically. What about you? Because I said at the start, you know, you were married, you had kids, you had a house, you're always sensible, Simon. You haven't aged a day. What is it, Simon? What are you? Surely you knew everything to begin with, and it's just been smooth all the way.
I'm glad you see me that way, Georgie. Mm. Sensible, boring.
Not boring. Not boring. Sensible with money and smart. But also, you're a snowboarder. You're a bit cool.
Yeah. Yeah, I've got nursing a sore shoulder from a skateboarding injury. Yeah, I guess for me, you know, from my perspective, yeah, I had two kids and I owned a flat in London. The big things that have changed for me is that my children are now, they've gone from being, you know, preschool children to secondary school children. And that's quite a like life stage to live through, and also a life stage to go through financially. We moved out of London just before the pandemic. That was basically just luck. And we moved to a house that we didn't knock it down completely. We pretty much knocked it down and then built a whole new house. So I've built a house. So I do feel, when I look back at what I've achieved, building a house is something that I look back on and I go, do you know what? That's quite a satisfying thing to have done. I obviously did not build the house with my own hands. Luckily for the members of my family and for our future prosperity, I didn't do any of the work on this house. But I did do it. I did it with a builder who I know and I trust and I get on with. And so that was a real, you know, anybody going into doing something like that, your relationship with your builder and the thing where something goes wrong and they turn around and say, actually, this is going to cost you more. The fact that you can trust them when they say that to you is 100% the most important thing you can do when you're doing something like a building project, even if it's just an extension, but certainly when you're building a house. And I'm also now probably in the house that I'll probably never move from. You know, you then think, okay, well, maybe that does change how I think about stuff, you know, financially. Because I think the big thing for most of us in this country is how expensive it is to buy a home and then how expensive it is to try and move up the property ladder. And the fact that it's such a lottery, such a gamble, you know, it's the casino, basically, rather than just simply being, well, I earn a bit more money now and I've saved a bit more money, I can now afford to move. So I think that takes a bit of a weight off your shoulders. The one thing I regret, I'll tell you what, is not taking a 10-year fixed rate mortgage 5 years ago. Well, 4 years ago. My mortgage is up in September next year. And I remember, I think it was my mum who said to me, you should take a 10-year fixed rate mortgage, you'll regret that. And I was like, no, thinking in the back of my mind, well, we might move again or whatever. I definitely regret that now. And then also, you know, financially speaking, I have saved, I have invested, but I haven't been as organized about it as I could be. And I don't think I've maximized what I have done with my money in that sense. I don't think I've automated it enough, which is the key thing. Get the money out of your account every month. And I also think I've tried to be too clever with my investments. I've tried to pick winners. And by trying to pick winners, I've missed out on the gains that I would have got just from investing in a simple, you know, global stock market tracker fund. And so when I look at my portfolio, I'm happy because I have invested and I do have the money there. And I think, okay, right, I need to keep that growing. But I also think, you know, there's a lot of stuff in there that basically is just kind of dragging things back. And even the things that do well, the things that haven't done so well have dragged it back. And I would have been better keeping it simple.
Lee, I want to ask, I know this is quite a broad question, but I want to ask, in your capacity as editor of This Is Money, how you see the last 10 years, financially speaking, has changed? In the, are we more savvy? Are the questions that we ask different? Are our concerns more about retirement? Are they different? What is the sort of financial mood over the last 10 years and how's it changed?
I think that financial journalism has played quite a big part in terms of, you know, there are a lot of different organisations now who have ramped up their personal finance writing. I think there's a lot more knowledge. I would say a lot of people were knowledgeable already. Of course, what happens sometimes in your life is you don't start taking money seriously until you're kind of in your 40s or 50s, because it's when you're at your highest earning power. It's when you might be thinking more about your pension, your investments, your savings, your property. I think that it has pushed into a younger demographic now. I think some of that younger demographic is getting swept up through things like social media, things like TikTok, where they might be getting their financial news and financial information from. I think we saw it a few years back with the whole GameStop stuff. Remember the whole kind of the trading, and actually realizing that there's way more innovation and way more technology now at our fingertips that make it easier to do things like invest within basically a couple of hours with very small amounts of money. And also things like innovations in our current accounts and just in our everyday financial lives. And I think people have also wised up, especially younger people, about things like their pensions. I think auto-enrollment has helped with that. I think it feels like it's gone from probably maybe 30, 40 years ago, for people who kind of select few would be interested in their personal finances, probably would read the FT or something of that like, to now it's become way more mainstream. It's way more at the on the front pages of the paper than it's ever been before. And people are interested in, you know, getting the best rate on their savings, getting switching deals for going current accounts, all the way to potentially listening about how to diversify their pension and making sure that they're maxing out and looking at forward forecasts, finding DIY investment platforms and investing at a low cost with low ongoing fees in a variety of markets around the world. And it's, I think, become way more broader in that. Even over the last 10 years, I would say that it's become broader in terms of a demographic, both age-wise, you know, wealth-wise. It affects everyone. You know, there's decisions in something like the budget, whether you've got lots and lots and lots of money, whether you have got very little money, or you're one of the 90% that sits between that. I think there's way more interest in decisions and our money. And I think we're way more open about talking about money. I don't think it's as taboo as it once was. I like to think that there's way more openness in our finances and the way things, our household finances are run. And I think a podcast like this, I think other financial podcasts, I think financial websites, financial sections of newspapers, and even tools that have kind of launched from financial providers and the education that they have on their websites, think a lot of it has opened lots of people's eyes to the power of finances and the power and control that you have got over your money. And I think it's been a kind of shift in that respect.
And I think a really, really welcome one, because one thing I mean, you mentioned it actually, Lee, that I was a sports journalist before, but this date doesn't just mark the start of This Is Money podcast. It marks the first week that I became a financial journalist. So please don't listen back, because I had absolutely no idea what I was talking about. Hopefully I do a little bit more now. And thank you guys for guiding me along that journey. But, you know, I don't think I remember beforehand. And yes, you could argue I wasn't in finance, so why would I look at it? But I was a human being, you know, who, and finance is really important in our lives. I don't remember that many kind of really accessible ways in which I could talk about money or understand, or money was making the front pages in a way that really related to my life. And I think now we're drawing that link between money and mental health, money and relationships. You know, money is not just pensions and mortgages. It's, you know, it is our lives and the way that we lead our lives. And the big thing that is really salient to me now compared to back then, and I joke about being in a rented flat in Clapham, you know, I now am in my home with my little puppy, is the freedom that you get from having the security of knowing that you have savings, investments, a home. It allows you to sort of take a few more risks, to say no to jobs you don't want to do, to sleep well at night. That is worth striving to achieve. And as I said, it's not only about cutting back, and there are some things that I absolutely will not cut back on as long as I can afford to. And I think that's really important to know that, you know, money is also there to enjoy your life as well. It's not just hair shirts and self-flagellation on the path to, you know, early retirement and getting a home. It's also to enjoy. But yeah, for me, it's that freedom. So thank you guys for being on that journey of being a financial journalist. I'm going to stop pontificating now, because we have some quite exciting anniversary news. Simon, what is it?
Okay, we're going to be doing some stuff to celebrate the 10th anniversary, and we've got two things to tell you about. But before I say that, I say, well said, Georgie. I thought that
Thank
was
you.
really, really interesting and also, you know, quite touching what you just said there. But to move on and to stop being quite so indulgent, but being a little bit indulgent, I suppose. Right, we are going to have a small party for This Is Money for the podcast. And as part of that, we are going to be recording a special bonus live podcast. This isn't the full-on big live podcast works. Don't worry, we're not going on the arena tour yet. This is a small affair in London at This Is Money HQ, and we've got five pairs of tickets for This Is Money podcast listeners. Okay, it's going to be on the 4th of December in the evening, 6 p.m. to 8 p.m. What you need to do if you want to come along is to email us at podcast@thisismoney.co.uk. We will be having a draw to pick out of the hat or whatever digital version of that we use to see who comes. But what we would like you to do to qualify is to just send us a message. Tell us when you first started listening to the podcast, how you listened to it. You know, do you listen to it while doing, like, you know, walking the dog on a Saturday morning or painting the ceiling on a Monday night, you know, that kind of stuff. If you could come up with something more interesting than walking the dog or painting the ceiling, please let me know. And so email us at podcast@thisismoney.co.uk. Okay, 4th of December. That's the date in London. Email us. We will be drawing the names out of a hat. And secondly, we are going to be giving away This Is Money exclusive merch in the form of special This Is Money podcast 10th anniversary mugs. Okay,
Oh
who
my,
doesn't like a
I
good
didn't even know
mug?
about this.
No, I know. Well, you see if you earn yourself a mug, Georgie, first.
I know.
What we're going to do is we're going to do a question of the week. So every week, we want you to basically send us your questions to podcast@thisismoney.co.uk. Ask us a financial question. We will pick out the best financial question of the week. Doesn't have to be related to that week's news, can be related to absolutely anything to do with money. Send us your question. We will pick out the best one. Every week, we will endeavor to answer it. And the person who gets their question asked will also get a This Is Money mug sent to them. So again, podcast@thisismoney.co.uk.
Lee is holding up a mug that I don't think that's the official This Is Money. Not even Lee's got a This Is Money. I want to get a mug. But Simon, you are a surprise. Look at you, your dark horse with that one at the end that I didn't even know about. Right. But before we go on, or before we leave, I have to have Simon's stat of the decade. Seemed appropriate, Simon.
Okay, yes, this is technically three stats, but if you had invested £1,000 in the FTSE All Share on the day that we first started doing the podcast, you would now have £1,260, a 26% return. If you had invested £1,000 in the S&P 500, you would now have £2,920, a 192% return. It's quite a lot more, isn't it? And if you had invested £1,000 in Bitcoin, then you probably still wouldn't be holding it because you would have cashed it in at some point or panicked when it crashed or did something like that. So don't beat yourself up about this. But you'd have £120,000.
Right. Thank you so much, gents. Here's to the next 10 years. You can keep up to date with all the latest breaking money news. Just go to thisismoney.co.uk or download the app. And if you have any comments or questions for the team or anything you'd like them to look into for your question of the week.
If you want to send us a question for question of the week, email us at podcasts@thisismoney.co.uk. Put the word question in the subject line. If you want to come to the live event, email us at the same place. Put the word event in the subject line. And if you just want to tell us something, email us at podcast@thisismoney.co.uk. You can also tweet us @thisismoney and come to thisismoney.co.uk/podcast.
And if you like our podcast, why not rate us wherever you found us? It helps other people find us too.
Take control of your finances with Charles Stanley Direct. Invest, save, coach, or plan. Using technology where it's helpful and people where it matters. Our website and app make trading cost-effective and flexible. But we're more than just an online investment service. We're here for you regardless of your financial needs or if your life takes an unexpected turn. Your finances, your way. Take control today with Charles Stanley Direct. Sign up now.
Investment involves risk.